When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We do have a couple of my IndieWire colleagues here to join me on stage. We have awards editor Marcus Jones and executive editor of film Kate Urblan.
We're not as professional, so we were like debating who goes first on stage.
You're deeply professional.
Yeah, so speaking of, you're a deeply professional, and this is not either of your first time here, obviously. I think, Kate, you've been at Sundance.
This is my 14th year at Sundance.
14?
Counting the two virtual years.
Yeah. And Marcus?
I did, like, every virtual year, but this is my first time in person since 2017.
And so, compared to last year, we were both here. Obviously, throughout the festival, there was a virtual parallel offering available to people at home. And for those who left early or came later, Kate, what do you feel like is a big difference this year compared to last year's festival? I mean, one thing I'll note is that every screening I've been in has been, like, sold out or pretty much wall-to-wall at capacity.
No, I know they sold out a lot of tickets very early. And I do feel the same thing, that it's like every screening we've been to has been really packed. And there's always lots of great buzz for the evening screenings. I think the vibe is more energetic, but also I think people are still sort of getting used to being back in the world. And so there's kind of more of a short fuse. But people do seem excited to be here a little bit more than last year. I feel like last year people who were here were very, very thrilled to be back in person. And this year maybe they're already a little, you know, jaded, but excited.
Well, and people seem more healthful this year. I feel like there's, you know, immunities built up. There's less sickness all around us.
Yes, less coughing.
Yeah. I guess a way to bring you both into the conversation is to talk about some of the films we've all seen, or each of us has seen on our own journeys in the festival. But on day one, on Thursday, we all saw the same movie, which was Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck's Freaky Tales. Let's talk about what you guys thought of that movie. Marcus, why don't you start? And yeah. I'm going to go last.
I really liked it. I feel like it's right up my alley. And I wasn't super enthusiastic about it being an anthology. But I feel like even people who didn't necessarily like it have been like, oh, they did kind of tie it together at the end. Like, there is a level of interconnectivity to it. But yeah, I didn't expect it to be kind of like exploitation, like in seeing kung fu and stuff like that. I'm like, that's what I really enjoyed, and it's kind of something that I would watch with my dad at home.
I think when Anna and Ryan introduced the film, they talked about a lot of the influences they had. And one of the things they said is, if you're a fan of the Warriors, meaning the Golden State Warriors basketball team and Walter Hill's 80s gem, you are going to love this film. And I knew that that wasn't going to vibe with Ryan. It vibed a little bit more with me. It has a lot of influences and a lot of throwbacks to films that I do like. I think I liked it a little less than Marcus. I did like the interconnectedness, but I just sort of loved that sort of thing anyway. But Ryan?
Yeah, so we're kind of going in descending order here. I feel strongly opposed to this film for all the reasons that you both said are good things about it. Especially that we're talking about how it does sort of culminate around this actual, from May 1987, Warriors-Lakers game that took place in Oakland. The movie is supposed to be this homage, sort of ode to Oakland. It could be anywhere, really. It doesn't really feel that, like, the location is that specific. It's sort of everywhere and nowhere, in a way. And if you don't care or know about this game or about any of the references that the movie's making, it doesn't try to, like, make you care about them. It's sort of like, and there are moments where it's just sort of like, they watched a lot of Quentin Tarantino movies, you know, in the pandemic or something, and we're like, all right, let's just like recreate these. And even there's, without spoiling anything, there's even a climactic fight sequence that is like verbatim, but a imitation of it, of the Brad Pitt versus the Manson showdown from the end of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. The house even looks the same. And it's like, why are we doing this? That movie, we just did this. You know, that movie's from 2019.
They're doing it because it rules.
But their version of it doesn't rule, and they think it rules, but I don't, I just, there's nothing, there's not, I don't, I, there's nothing personal to me about this movie.
I mean, I would tend to, I do feel like, in terms of the Oakland aspect, I assume it's real if you know, you know, because there are, like, locations that they establish, like the movie theater.
The Grand Lake Theater.
Some of the restaurants. But yeah, no, even watching it in the audience, I was surprised that, like, when they showed Too Short was doing a cameo, because Too Short is also a character in the story, that the audience didn't really have that big of a reaction to it. But yeah, I don't know. It could be one of those things too, where it's just like, there's a lot of people in the film that I'm a big fan of. As a Normani fan, we're fed so little, and so I mean, if you're just something.
This Normani Dominique Thorne chapter, that's the second in the movie, is sort of the most like Left 4 Dead of all of them in the film. By the end, it doesn't really circle back to it. They are not really given many dimensions, unfortunately.
I think that Ryan and I, the divide that we have is, I'm happy to see Anna and Ryan doing a film post Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Where they're using a lot of the things that they learned, making a giant MCU film, and I think are trying to return to their indie roots. And I appreciated seeing that. And I think Ryan feels the opposite.
I feel that they have now recovered from the worst traits that were absorbed in the making of Captain Marvel, and that they're perhaps maybe applied better here, but still misapplied nonetheless. Anyway, we get it. I didn't like this movie. You guys sorted it. You really did. We can talk about some other ones. Like, there's one that I didn't see that you both really liked, and I believe you both were, that had you weeping in the theater, which was Ghostlight. Thoughts?
So Ghostlight is a film by Kelly O'Sullivan and Alex Thompson. They previously had this film called St. Francis that was at South by Southwest. It's just, it's a wonderful gem of a film. Both of these films sort of have, I think, log lines that might not sound very appealing, but they are such, you know, real people, and they're deeply feeling, and I find them very funny that they end up making these beautiful films that just, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's really true. They make you laugh and they make you cry. Ghostlight is about a Chicago construction worker whose family is going through a tragic event. And he finds healing by working with a local community theater group doing a sort of like ragtag production of Romeo and Juliet. And one of the things that I also think is remarkable about this film, the man who's the lead and his wife and his daughter, they are a real life family, and their real life chemistry really just works beautifully and adds a whole other dimension to the film.
Yeah, I think it really speaks to sort of any past drama kids. They do really, especially the daughter is like about, it's on 10 as far as like theater kid energy. But like it really works with the story. I think the most sort of recognizable actor is Dolly De Leon, who is Juliet in the production in the film. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the ones where by the end I was tearing up. Even though like... some criticism I've heard of it is that it kind of lines up. It's really inspired by Shakespeare in many ways.
Yeah, healing and trauma are themes of a lot of films this year.
But it is done with a light touch that I think people who maybe are, you know, a little burnt out on very traumatic films will enjoy.
And this, in Ghostlight, this is an acquisition title. It has not been picked up yet. There are, you know, there's a lot of films on the hook for distribution here. There's only been a couple sales so far. Evil Inn, the documentary from Benjamin Ree, the director of Pierre and the Thief. It's a documentary about a Norwegian gamer who had a secret life as a gamer and that his parents discovered after he dies of a degenerative muscular disease. Netflix bought this one. You know, what we've learned in the last recent years, especially since the pandemic, is that the sort of overnight bidding war sensation is is not, you know, it's not in the water perhaps quite as much as it was in years past. And even like last year, you know, Netflix took a couple days to buy Fair Play for $20 million. You know, there is one really strong film that already has distribution from A24, which also produced it, which is Jane Schoenbrunn's I Saw the TV Glow, which is my favorite film of the festival so far. And I feel like for most people who've seen it and respond to it, they also agree. A24 will release it later this year, but it stars Justice Smith as a teen, and it's kind of an early 2000s sort of a setting, a teen who is awakening to their own transness vis-a-vis this TV show that's sort of like a Nickelodeon-style teen sci-fi series, and this character really begins to lose themselves in the sort of line between the reality and the fiction of the show and real life. And what this movie really demonstrates is how David Lynch's Twin Peaks, The Return, from 2017, truly one of the most miraculous gifts we've ever had on TV, is really becoming such a defining touchstone for a certain generation of filmmakers. And this movie really quotes The Return quite conspicuously, but in a way that doesn't feel like an imitation and is really just like a very touching, beautiful, scary, haunting ode. I can't say enough good things about this one.
I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I love Jane's first feature film, which was also at Sundance, called We're All Going to the World's Fair, which sort of does a similar thing with internet life. So I am extremely excited to see this. We have a very glowing review from David Ehrlich, so it's already a staff favorite.
Yeah. Yes. David gave it an A, so, you know, that's it's a bold pronouncement at the beginning of the year. But hey, I mean, it's really nice after we've had the last, like, 3 months talking about the same movies. You know, it's like, I don't ever want to speak of or see some of these things again.
Which ones?
I don't know if I should say. Now it's nice to have fresh material and something new to talk about. And so, you know, that certainly is all in toward inspiring such a fervent reaction. You know, another movie that premiered yesterday to some divisive response was the film by Sam and Andy, Love Me, with Kristen Stewart and Steven Yeun, and they play a buoy and a satellite who, many billions of years after the extinction of the planet, become sentient and fall in love with each other, and eventually their sentience enables them to realize, manifest themselves as actual people, even though they are AI. It's sort of a high concept film. It's complicated to explain. Marcus and I saw it together. Marcus, what did you think of this?
I appreciate ambition. And so there was a moment where I'm like, okay, I just want them to land a plane. Because part of it is like them as like almost we avatars, if you remember, the me's or whatever. And so during that portion, I was like, this is cool, but it's kind of running out of steam. And then it does evolve. And like, I think it's really creative. I think when you really get to see Kristen and Steven perform, that's like at its peak. But yeah, I I understand when people have issues with it. Because when you like dig a little deeper, I'm like, were they trying to say something about global warming? Were they trying to say like AI or people? Like,
I think all of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the characters are called Me and I Am. That gives you a sense of sort of, there is a tweeness to the film. Can't deny that. I did respond to it.
Well, also we get to see like Kristen Stewart as an influencer at the end of the world. That's pretty interesting.
Yes, no, and she's very good at embodying that specific kind of person that you don't want to be around normally. No, I mean, this is a movie that I actually think does have commercial appeal compared to some of the other films that I've seen so far. Kate, there's one that we saw last night, the new Steven Soderbergh film Presence, which he financed himself. He shot it during the pandemic, and then during the lockdown, during the strikes, with a SAG-AFTRA interim waiver, and again is challenging himself to reinvent the wheel on how another genre is told cinematically, which here is the haunted house story, but the movie is shot from the actual, literal, subjective point of view of the ghost that is haunting this house.
The presence.
The presence. The presence. We don't want to... Ghost is not a word that's used in this film. You know, we... Steven Soderbergh is... He churns them out, and he shoots these movies in, like, under 2 weeks, always, and is always challenging himself to outdo whatever technical... sort of wide swing he took the last time. It's not a scary movie, it's more of a supernatural drama.
I think we really enjoyed it. I've already seen some headlines today talking about people walking out because they were so scared.
That didn't happen.
It's an immersive film. I think if you get a little jittery with handheld camera, that might be part of it, but I found it. It sounds weird to say that it's fun because it goes to some dark places at the end, but I think it's fun. I really enjoyed watching it, and I enjoyed watching it with a big crowd.
If people walked out, it's not because they were scared. And confirm that.
It's true. If you don't mind, I have like a question related to that.
Please, yeah.
Like hearing the films that you guys enjoyed, because I will say like Freaky Tales was like the closest thing I have to like a favorite so far, but I've been like mildly enjoying everything, but... We already know Sundance is, like, a documentary launchpad. Would you say, like, in recent years, like, the horror films have been really strong, too?
I mean, the midnight section has always been, I think people sometimes forget, like, you know, films like Hereditary, The Witch. This is, like, great launchpad for horror films that we keep talking about the whole year and years after.
Yeah, I mean, last year I don't think there was a runaway horror movie.
Well, Talk to Me.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yes, Talk to Me, of course, which sort of debuted quietly in the festival itself, and then obviously went on to gross like $80 million or something from A24. The big Netflix horror movie last year, Run, Rabbit, Run, that kind of just got dropped on the platform and left for dead. But
I feel like people really liked Birth, Rebirth. Wasn't that like the Frankenstein?
Yeah, that was the IFC picked that one up. Yeah, there was some interest in that one. And it's interesting to speak, actually, not to rehash I Saw a TV Glow, but this is another A24 horror movie that I don't think has the commercial appeal that maybe Talk to Me does, but it will have a critical resonance for sure.
Yeah. I'm scared of everything, but like the way everyone talks about these films, I'm like, maybe I should reconsider.
Yeah, maybe it'll be you walking out of that theater.
I probably
theater.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if we could, if there are any questions in the audience, if anyone has anything they want to ask. Sure, right here.
Do we have a mic?
Oh, that's right. We do have a microphone. Otherwise, I can give you mine for now. Here, go ahead.
Hello, I'm Ritesh Mehta, big fan of the podcast, been listening for many years. My question was about the distribution prospects for international documentaries. I'm glad to hear that Evil Inn has distribution, but last year there were some amazing ones. One that comes to mind is Melissa Dando, the South African documentary that I don't believe has seen distribution and wasn't in talks for, it wasn't eligible, I believe, for the Academy Awards. So I was wondering, what are your thoughts on, or whether you've spoken to distributors about what they see as the scene for international documentaries and the distribution in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Our reporter Brian Wilk wrote he's done a number of sort of walk-up pieces about the market, and when he was talking about some hot titles, one of the hot titles is an international documentary. It's called Nocturnes. It's about moths. The film has not yet premiered, but I have seen it, and I really, really loved it. I think that it has the same producers of Fire of Love, and people have sort of compared it to that, but I found it to be really immersive and really special, and it has incredible sound. I watched it in a Dolby Theater, and I think that a smart distributor should absolutely snap it up and really turn it into an experience for their audience. And so I think that I have high hopes for that one. That's the one I can speak up specifically.
And I mean, obviously we know that Sundance has always been a really wonderful launchpad for documentaries, but even looking at the short list, not to go back to the Oscars, but looking at the short list of documentary contenders of the 15 films, many of them did come out of Sundance last year. And so I think there are eyes on this festival as a place to launch documentaries in the direction of awards. I mean, with the festival program this year, The Mother of All Lives, Mother of All Lies, which is shortlisted as well, and not currently looking for U.S. distribution, and so, you know, I think that that tradition is certainly continuing here.
Yeah, I guess just paying attention to it from an awards perspective, I think the thing that really bums me out is that when distributors do really look at these films and put their energy behind it, it does go a long way. I do think Melisande might have been on the shortlist, but there were some other films last year, like King Cole as well. Like, they really had to almost scramble together to even kind of vie for awards recognition. And when you look at the shortlist, it's almost shocking to see something like Kokomo City, which was a winner last year, not make it, given how much critical acclaim it had. But sort of behind the scenes, it sounds like it's just, it didn't have a lot of money behind it. And so I do hope that distributors really take notice, because when they do, I think these films really get celebrated. And I think the audience has changed to where there's not a shakiness around whether it's in English or a different language. Like, people kind of flock to everything regardless of whether they speak like the native language.
Yeah. Thank you for your question. Anyone else want to ask anything?
Oh.
Eric in the back. There's Mark Eric Cohen, Farmer Tonicolo.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Been listening for years. You're doing a great job. And I love coming to Sundance and talking about these things, because it feels like there's something to tell the rest of the film world about in this environment. And at the same time, it feels like it can be a bit of a bubble. In the last few years, because of COVID, there are films that people can watch at home, but not all the distributors like that, right? Especially somebody like A24, which puts its films out of competition so that they don't have to be on the platform. So people can't watch I Saw the TV Glow When You're Really Excited About It right now. So my question is, do you think that's a good thing, or should those distributors chill out, let Sundance sell tickets in all 50 states and sort of maximize visibility for these movies when they're premiering?
I mean, I'm for a film festival to be as democratic and accessible as possible when they are often so gatekept and so expensive. I mean, this is a trend of all film festivals, that it's really expensive for people to attend, even when you are media and some elements of that are comped. I mean, a couple of years ago when the festival was fully virtual and all of these titles were available online, I think last year only Past Lives was like the one, and that was A24 at a competition, wasn't available. I think there was just as much of a sense of community online and in some of the creative ways that Sundance tried to work with the fact that everyone was participating from home. I think that's a great way of putting it. I do think that the distributors should chill out. I mean, Neon has 3 movies that it's brought to the festival: Stress Positions, Seeking Mavis Beacon, Handling the Undead, and all of those are in the various competition sections across dramatic, documentary, world cinema, which means those will be available for people. And, you know, I think it's setting a good precedent.
No, I mean, I think one of the things we saw during the first couple of years of the pandemic is, like, if you put a new movie, whether it's in theaters or it's in festivals online, people are going to watch it. And I agree with Brian. I think it should be as accessible and democratic and possible for people to see these things. I understand the business element of it, but I do think that when we're talking about all these things, everyone's like, oh man, when can I see it? It's like, oh, well, I don't know. That doesn't do a service to our readers or the film fans.
And if your movie's good, it's going to work on the platform just as well as it does in the theater, as much as people want you in the theater.
I think a big issue I have is that, there's a lot of energy around something like Past Lives, but people's attention spans are short. So by the time it actually becomes accessible, that part isn't as advertised. They know they want to see the movie, but they haven't figured out how when it's finally available to them. So I do think, like we've said, making it more democratic will really start to reflect the love that's bubbling up for great storytelling that we see here.
I wondered, lastly, perhaps, we just have a few minutes here, if there's any film that's eligible in competition that you can talk about, whether you've seen it here or before, that you think would be a contender for the Sundance Awards across the competition sections next weekend.
The one I'm hearing is Dee Dee.
Which will be available on the platform, so I will be watching it there.
But the director, Sean Wang, he's also currently on the documentary shortlist for a film he made that's going to be on Disney Plus soon. But yeah, I think that everything I've heard, it's really sweet and people really enjoy it. And so it's cool to see like a new kind of emerging filmmaker already have a lot of energy when it's not a film that's kind of using stars to advertise it.
So this is Screen Talk Part 2, where we talk about the Oscar nominations. And I was pretty pleased. You know, the top 10 came in very much with the PGA, as we expected. And the big snub, if you want to use that word, it's not really the right word, because it's just a question of numbers. All the people put in their votes, and Greta Gerwig somehow got left out, the creator of Barbie. She obviously got an adapted screenplay, and now maybe there will be a sympathy vote for her.
I mean, it, about this snub, if you will, everyone's acting like it's like this huge blow to feminism that she wasn't nominated for Best Director, but there is a woman in there, and the movie's up for Best Picture. She's not, and the people are upset about Margot, but it's like, it kind of like devalues the producing on Barbie, the writing on Barbie, because it got 8 nominations. It's very well represented,
and it could win a few crafts. It could win the screenplay, and it could win a few crafts. I thought Ryan Gosling spoke out beautifully about it, appropriately about it, you know, supporting his team. But it this is how it works. There's only 5 slots, right? And there's 10 Best Picture nominees.
Did you see just today Hillary Clinton like tweeted like a conciliatory message to Greta and Margot? Someone's going to win something now.
Oh my. So that's now you. I have to eat crow today, everyone. I'm eating crow. Brian was right about Anatomy of a Fall. The Taste of Things didn't get in. You know, the French were wrong. They should have submitted Anatomy of a Fall. It all comes down to some political thing Justine Trier said at Cannes that pissed off the Minister of Culture.
Yeah, she said something, you know, calling the government neoliberal or something like that. I mean, she's known for being this kind of outspoken intellectual. And apparently it was apparently there was a divide. There was a split on the committee where like there was a final vote that was like the straw that sort of like pushed Anatomy of a Fall out of contention. But it's great that the Oscar nominations overall were so internationally leaning. I mean, there was 5 apiece for Zone of Interest and Anatomy of a Fall. And it was, you know, just it's great to see that the more eclectic Academy body gets, the films nominated are going to reflect that.
Yeah, I'm really pleased about that too. And I'm also thinking that where the momentum lies. Okay, we already have figured out that Killers of the Flower Moon is losing momentum. It didn't get Leo. It didn't get screenplay. That's a big blow, actually. It got Robert De Niro and Lily Gladstone, as it should. And it got 10 nominations, which isn't, you know, isn't a terrible thing. But there's a possibility that this movie could be yet another Martin Scorsese movie with all the 10 nominations and no wins.
This is what I said months ago.
it's a terrible prospect. Because I don't see Scorsese taking director away from Oppenheimer. I mean, it is Christopher Nolan's to lose, picture, director, probably adapted screenplay, but I think Barbie could take it now.
I think it's absolutely primed to take it now. Like, it's going to get those sympathy votes.
Because Oppenheimer can't win. I mean, it got 13 nominations. It can't win everything, you know? And so a lot of the craft categories are actually competitive with Barbie, actually, and Killers. So we'll see. And I think there could be momentum for Anatomy of a Fall and for American Fiction, by the way, which did very well with 4. And then you have this extraordinary push, I think, could happen for The Zone of Interest. I think The Zone of Interest is one of the best movies of the year and very serious. And a lot of people are just catching up with it. It's one of those things they're avoiding because they think it's going to be upsetting. And now they have to see it. So it could have that late inning momentum that sometimes helps a movie push forward. It's not going to beat Oppenheimer, but it could get some things. We'll see.
It definitely didn't have this momentum a few months ago, even though I felt like after Ken, it kind of dipped. It did open late. And A24 hasn't really taken it out wide yet. Of course, now they will do that, or wider, as wide as a movie like that could possibly.
And Poor Things is going wide now, yes. And so on. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how. Poor Things did very well. 11. Emma Stone, front runner for best actress, I think. I think she could take it.
Oh, she's gonna want to like give that thing to Lily though, you know, because you saw at the CCAs how she was kind of just like, why do I have this?
It's a big deal. I'm not gonna say that. Lily could still win. We'll see. I mean, it could be irresistible to the Academy to give that to Lily Gladstone. It's possible. It could happen. What else? Past Lives got two, a best picture and screenplay.
The Christine Vachon, I think that's her first best picture nomination, which is crazy to think.
She's had so many. She told me this. She said, I've had a lot of actors, you know, from my films get nominated, but I've never been in best picture. She's very excited. Very excited.
Oh, I'm sure.
And what else? All right. So we've got the holdovers still chugging along. So I bet that Paul Giamatti wins SAG and then Cillian Murphy wins the Oscar. We'll see. We'll see how that plays out.
I mean, and the holdovers getting in for editing just also shows that there's a lot of support for that movie.
And Anatomy of a Fall.
Yes.
That was a shocker. That's the biggest shocker of the whole day.
Yes.
That Anatomy of a Fall got editing. That is really unprecedented, really. Except for, you know, Parasite or something. What does that mean? It means that the editors were that impressed, you know? That's incredible.
And that Neon did a really good job.
Yes, they did. What else? Napoleon ended up with 3 Craft nominations that it won't win. NIAID got its. So, all right, Netflix did really well. Netflix got 18 nominations all by itself. You know, Disney got 20, but that means Searchlight and the animated films and the shorts. You know, that's those things. There was one Disney Plus short that got in there. So they counted all of those things. On its own, Netflix got 18. So that's 2 for Naya, the 2 acting nominations. I'm happy for Annette Bening and Jodie Foster. Do you think Annette has a chance?
No, it's so sad. This is the 5th time. It's just, this is what I've said before is I'm like, she might have to just settle for a governor's award one day, you know?
Oh, no, she'll have her. She's still young. She'll have her moment. Then there's Maestro with 7. That's another one that could be nominated for 7 and not win anything. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's looking like it.
And then you have Society of the Snow, which they, of course, hoped to do a big thing with, like All Quiet on the Western Front. And like the BAFTAs, it really was just foreign language plus makeup, which was totally deserved. But it didn't get a whole lot of other things. And Rustin Coleman Domingo, big deal. Wonderful. I'm so pleased.
Yeah, I was very happy about that.
And then American Symphony got, you know, whiffed in the doc category. The documentaries were mystifying. I went to a party last night. It was a sort of Oscar nominations night party packed with Academy members. It was given by Josh Harutunian, who you know, I know. And
of course,
he said, hey, you know, I wanted a drink tonight. So I thought, why not drink with a lot of people?
Oh, I'm sure a lot of people were drinking yesterday and not for the right reasons. Well, you know, but Bobby Wine maybe was unexpected, would you say? But that did, you know, that recently, like I went to the Cinema Eye Honors a few weeks ago and that won the top prize.
I should have been paying more attention to that. It also won the top prize at IDA. So that was my bad. That may be the front runner. Although Eternal Memory is very, very moving. And if all the, now everybody will see the films. So I could see that sometimes it's the one with the most emotion. The thing about Bobby Wine, or however you pronounce it, is that it is so upsetting to recognize what these people went through to make it. And I did a Q&A and everybody was in tears at a certain point because it was so horrifying what they went through. And the guy goes back. He goes back to Uganda.
I think it is Bobby Wine. I think you're right.
I have to fix, but it was talk, you know, they didn't do still, they didn't do, somebody was explaining to me last night that the Doc Branch is so serious and so terrified of having another octopus teacher that they are going the other way rigorously, you know, to find almost serious, difficult movies to champion, you know, but it was an odd assortment, with no
Well,
obvious front runner.
yep, and there's one or two on there that I'm going to be catching up with now, so you
I've
know.
actually seen them in this case,
Okay.
and I have the shorts. I have to catch up on the
Yes.
shorts. And I know we're not talking about Sundance, but as we tape today, which is earlier in the week, it's Wednesday. We have today is the day the Sundance portal opens up to the rest of us, and we can jump in. Are you still in Sundance?
Oh, I'm still here. Yeah, but I'm leaving within the hour. Like as soon as
Oh,
we hang up here, I'm
okay.
packing, finishing
Good, good,
packing.
good, good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, apparently, six people at IndieWire have COVID.
Yep, and I'm
That's a
hearing that like
sample.
Sundance staff has it too. I don't know what event it was. I mean, it was a series of them. It was
You
and then
guys
we
had your
were.
chili party.
Yeah, and it was in a bigger space this time though, so it felt like there was room and to breathe, though there was like 300 people there. So yeah, I'm sure I tested negative yesterday, but it's coming for me. So
Just wear your mask on the plane, Ryan.
yes, I will.
Be a good boy. I sound like your mother. Forgive me. All right, I will let you go. Unless there's anything else you think we need to address. I mean, I
No,
like
I
that Henry Sugar got in for the shorts, and Pedro Almodovar did not because it was a fashion short, you know. So they weren't going to do that. What were some of the May December got the screenplay? This is part of the Netflix list. And Spider-Man was limited to Spider-Man animation. That was it. Nothing more. I was not happy with the various music nominations. They're always weird, the music branch. Diane Warren, again, really?
Yes, and she will lose again.
Poor, she has her Oscar. Let
She
her
has the
enjoy
governor's
it.
Oscar. Yeah, she has
Yeah.
an
Yeah.
honorary Oscar.
Let her enjoy
But
it. I
she
was
wants to
surprised.
win the real one. She
I
really
know she
does.
does. And I like Diane Warren and I respect her as a songwriter. That's not the issue. It's that the women, excuse me, the people on the in the music branch who are her buddies and her friends keep nominating her. That's what it's about. And whether it's a good song or a bad movie or a movie anyone's seen, it doesn't matter. They nominate her anyway.
And they are brilliant feats of music making. I mean, it's usually just a few chords. You know what I mean? These are familiar type of songs that she writes that are sort of easy earworms, and not maybe doing the complicated work that some of these other things that
Yeah,
are
there
left
you
out
go.
were doing.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So, all right, I'll talk to you. Oh yeah, Robot Dreams was a surprise on the animated front. That was
And
delightful.
I'll be watching that now.
That's a good one. All right.
Yes.
See you later,
Okay.
everybody.
All right. Bye. Thanks, Osmond.
Bye-bye.